I'm Mark Sapotowski. This television show is brought to you by the CTV Society. And with me here tonight, we have other members of the CTV Society. And we're going to be talking about American Apocalypse, Part 2, the self-fulfilling prophecy we deserve. Over this way, we have Dennis Smith. He's a member of the CTV Society, one of our newest members. Over here, we have Stephen Durst.
February 4th, 2004, live call-in show.
And he's a member. And we also have our other member over there, Rick Chapla, the original producer of Oh Say Can You See. And if we could go to that first image there. This article was the inspiration for this two-part show. This is the second installment, American Apocalypse. By Robert J. Lifton, How Superpower Syndrome is Ravaging the World. This was the December 22nd, 2003 issue of The Nation. And essentially, a lot of articles were talking about the sort of the apocalyptic effect of George Bush kind of taking advantage of religious language as a politician to kind of whip up a frenzy about an approaching apocalyptic war of good, ultimate good against ultimate evil, and he seems to be carrying out a program of systematic consecutive conquests, as far as I can tell. He lays low at certain points, but ever since 2001, he has been keeping his promises to the far right-wing war hawks and to the religious right and to the sort of overlap between the two that seem to anticipate and expect continuing series of wars somehow involving the Middle East and leading us toward what? I don't know. It seems that one would have to say that he implies some kind of movement toward theocracy by his language. He's like our preacher king president or something. He's really quite bizarre, I think. Could we go to image two? Image two is the districting wars. We covered this in our last show also. This is from that same issue. Actually, this was from the following issue, December 29th, 2003. This was by Sasha Abramsky, and I think that this is the sense that I want to get across, was the sense that Abramsky had about what's going on in Texas, what's been going on in the country. 3 million jobs have been lost. Many districts, as many as 16 congressional districts that have been held by Democrats, essentially through a fraud in Texas, are being given to the Republicans, and this is while the president is waving the Bible around, and apparently if you wave the Bible around and you talk in Manichaeistic terms of ultimate good against ultimate evil, you can pretty much do anything you want as president of the United States, especially in these days when, as The Nation points out, the South has become the most politically powerful and populous part of the United States. And this is also something that we're going to be looking at a little bit more closely in this particular episode of Oaks Again.
That Bible Belt is scary.
Now, in the third image, if we could go to that, this is also from December 22nd, 2003. Bush's religious language, as I was saying, people have noticed that Bush really, you know, he talks about good and evil, and they hate us because we're good, and they, you know, they want evil to succeed, and these sorts of things that sound
yes.
Very
plausible?
No, very implausible if you're trying to be objective. But to someone who's expecting that Jesus Christ is, you know, coming the day after tomorrow, they kind of want to hear this sort of thing.
We certainly have to remember it's not just the Christians, but fundamentalist Jews and fundamentalist Muslims are also fighting this war to rid the world of evil.
It's, we're talking about American Apocalypse.
Another aspect of that. Another aspect of that too, Mark. You just mentioned there, and I don't mean to contradict you because I think you're telling it like we see it. But if these folks really believed that Jesus were coming today after tomorrow, they wouldn't do anything. They'd sit back and let him take care of it.
Well, speaking about Jesus coming the day after tomorrow, we're going to go into a roll-in that has a lot to do with this sort of thing, and it's the sort of thing we see more and more in American society and American media. This is from a film called Left Behind 2, and the subtitle is Tribulation Force. They're sort of the A-team of the apocalypse, and this was directed by Bill Corcoran and produced by Nick T. Tabarrok. And if we could go into that first
Ready.
Moment. Hey. This is after the rapture happened, and now they're in the tribulation. Can you turn that up? We can't hear it.
He said, take heed now, for the Lord...
No, I know. He's speaking in English.
You are false prophets, claiming to know the secrets to God's kingdom.
For God will bring every deed into judgment, Ben Judah, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil. I, the Lord, search the heart. I test the mind. And I will give every man according to his ways and according to the things he has done.
I have kept the commandments since my youth.
By the deeds of the law, no flesh shall be justified in his sight. For by grace you are saved, through faith. And this is not for yourselves. It is the gift of God, not by works, so that no one can boast.
Got it.
I don't understand.
We are ambassadors, as though God were making his appeal through us.
This is GNN. We are experiencing technical difficulties. Please stand by.
Be reconciled to God. God made him who had no sin to be sin for us, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God.
For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him will not perish, but have everlasting life. For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through him. He who believes in the Son is not condemned. But he who does not believe is condemned already because he has not believed in the name of the only begotten Son of God.
In the name of the Son of God.
He is the Christ, Jesus.
Broadcast got cut. Nobody saw it.
What do you mean?
Well, welcome back to the live portion of Oh Say Can You See. You saw a little bit of Left Behind 2, Tribulation Force, as they were saying. They're sort of the A-team of the apocalypse. And that was by Cloud 10 Pictures Studios and 2002. And What you saw there was the guy that said cut, he's the Antichrist. He kind of talks like Boris Badenov or sort of like Count Dracula. His name is Nikolai Carpathia. And he's really evil, but everyone thinks he's really good because he's always talking about peace, and he's like the head of the UN, and the UN is evil. We all know that, right? And what you saw was a scene at the Wailing Wall, and the Christian reporter from GNN, sort of the CNN guy, is taking the biggest Jewish rabbi in the world to the Wailing Wall, and then Holy Force freezes all of the evil people that are trying to, Carpathia has installed to keep everyone away from the Wailing Wall. And then they go, and there have been these guys that have, they breathe fire, really bad breath. They're from heaven. And they're like Jewish prophets or something, and they're all fitting into this apocalypse thing. And
build a temple.
And early on, it's not really emphasized, but they're kind of under their breath, all these words are saying, build me the temple. And really what's going on is that these movies are calling for theocracy, and they're calling for a Jewish temple to be built in Jerusalem, where the one of the very holiest Islamic mosques stands. And so this is kind of a big sore point. And this is something that actually... a lot of the born-again types, fundamentalists,
I would like to make a statement. I think that these religious fundamentalists from both sides are what's really tearing this world apart. You know, a religion had its place a long time ago before people knew not to rape their neighbor's wife or oxen and do this or that or the other thing. But for Christ's sakes, we're a little more evolved now. We're a little more civilized. We have books. We have different ideas about things. Religion is just a duality of man. It's psychologically, it's the two facets of us. We know. My dad believed that we all had the answer within inside us, and we could see it. It was all visible to us, unless you were mentally deranged or some sort of psychotic or something like that. And this stuff. I'm not pro-Christian at all. Christians they got a bad track record, just about as bad as the Muslims. And the Muslims are all pissed off because of the Christians' track record with them. And I think we need to get away from all this stuff. And the show tonight is about the American apocalypse, which is, at this day and age, it really blows my mind. I'm no genius or anything. I'm going to be like in the high, bright category or something. But I can figure out that this stuff is all crap. It's made to play on people's fears and people's... ignorance, to draw them into your world, to make them think that this is the way things are.
I think it's a sleight of hand.
And it's ridiculous.
While in one hand you're going...
It's very, very much a sleight of hand.
I think people with ulterior motives that really don't have anything to do with religion are going, apocalypse, apocalypse, but in the meantime, you know, they're picking your pocket, you're losing your jobs, they're gaining a great deal of power. An awful lot is going on. I think Rick Chappell has an awful lot to say about this, too.
Well, I think that this is an interesting topic, but I think in all fairness, first of all, even within the evangelical Protestant movement, this dispensational premillennialism, which is what this is all about, I'm not going to take the time to explain exactly what that is, but that type of thinking is a minority even within the evangelical born-again movement. But certainly to a man like George Bush and people like Rumsfeld and Cheney, et cetera, the real agenda in the Middle East, of course, ostensibly is to fight terrorism. Now, if we discount that, the idea is to get control of the oil and establish some type of at least regional hegemony. But if I could just touch on something slightly off topic, but not really. As we all know, at least on this panel, George Bush and his father were both members of a secret society called Skull and Bones at Yale. John Kerry was also. Now, Pat Robertson, about 12 years ago, wrote a book called The New World Order, I believe, in which he delineated all this and talked about these nefarious groups. And he was accused of anti-Semitism, which it really wasn't. He was simply talking about secret societies and very powerful men, and they are mostly men, maybe all, who are trying to control the world through one way or another. But even after Pat Robertson wrote this book, he supported George Bush Sr. and this George Bush, who hates to be called Junior, so I'll call him Junior. And I think you make a good point, Mark. Even someone like Pat Robertson, who is considered at least within that minority of the evangelical community as some type of a guru He's really a hypocrite too. I mean, maybe somebody like Jerry Falwell. Jerry Falwell really isn't too bright, so maybe he really believes all this. Pat Robertson is an educated man, and he's got to know what's going on. And really, it's a smokescreen, and I hope
that's the faint.
The president has got to know what's going on.
He may not.
His father was even using this kind of language, and especially in relationship to the South. The South has become very important, and this sort of belief is on the upswing and has been for 30 years in terms of a growing movement, especially in the South. You can say it's a minority thing, and
I'm talking about dispensational premillennialism, per se.
Which is part of this thing.
But could I just talk about the South as well, and call me an you can call me anti-South if you want, but I have a little difficulty understanding how these people can be considered so moral and so patriotic when, after all, these states that comprise the South rebelled against the United States during the Civil War.
And with that, we're going to go right into
roll-in
number two,
symbolism too,
which really fits in well here. This is from Gods and Generals, which is a 2003 film. And this is about the South and about religion. I mean, this is a Civil War movie, but this particular clip will fit in well here. If we could go with our second roll-in. Is that it all ready? Roll in. Okay, roll in two. Gods and Generals.
Right. Is that pro South?
What place is this?
Chancellor's Crossing. We're another 2 hours or so from Fredericksburg.
We'll rest here for a short time.
Yes, sir. I'll see what the good folks can provide.
General be fixing to eat something
warm. No, no,
gotta ride on straight through to General Lee. Don't want to get all warmed up just feeling cold on over again. You never seem to mind the cold much.
Oh, well, I mind it. I just don't shows it. Now, little song. I know this corn look poorly. It sure beats no corn at all.
From your family lately?
Ain't heard much for some time. Yankee mail used to move quicker than Secesh mail.
Lord, from where you sit, you can see the great distance that separates our southern men from their wives and children. We pray that you watch over our families. Lord, I ask you to watch over Jim Lewis's family, over his friends, his loved ones, wherever they may be.
Lord, I know you season to the hearts of all men, just like you season to the heart of old Jim Lewis. And Lord, I know there's no lying or deceitfulness can hide from you. You find the truth in the bottom of the deepest pit of darkness. There be no hiding from your truth and your ever watchful eye.
Amen.
How is it, Lord? Can you explain something to this old Virginia man? How is it a good Christian man, like some folks I know, can tolerate their black brothers in bondage? How is it, Lord, they don't just break them chains? How is it, Lord, my heart is open and aching, and I wants to know?
God speak to us. Speak to your children. Speak to Jim Lewis and Thomas Jackson, your humble and obedient servants. Speak to all of us. Our hearts are open. Lord, you show us the way, we will follow.
Amen.
Amen.
Jim.
What is the status of your family?
About half is free, half slave. That's counting all the cousins and such.
Jim, you must know that there are some officers in this army who are of the opinion that we should be enlisting Negroes as a condition for freedom. General Lee is among them.
That's what they say is round the camp.
Your people will be free, one way or the other. The only question is whether the Southern government will have the good sense to do it first and soon, and in so doing, seal a bond of enduring friendship between us.
That's what they say, General.
God's plan is a great mystery. It will be revealed to us.
That's all the fodder you get tonight. He's going to a country where there's nothing more for an animal to eat than there is what's in the palm of my hand.
Immediately.
You're the Democrat.
What, I'm ready? Well, you just saw a little bit of Gods and Generals. That's an Antietam Filmworks production, directed by and written by and produced by Ron Maxwell, 2003. There you saw Stonewall Jackson talking to his black employee, not actually his slave. And the question and the relevance here was related to this film. It shows a lot of Confederate generals and Confederates praying all the time. You don't see many Yankees doing that. And it's very related to a kind of... I mean, you can roll around and be really holy, and you can be very devout, and yet there's an awful lot of slavery going on. And I look at this film, and I listen to people that sometimes talk to me, Southerners, and I'm just appalled, because they'll tell me that slavery really wasn't that bad, and they'll tell me that the North really was wrong in the Civil War. And I think that this is a trend, and this is why we have so much attack on the federal government, as it really helps people, because the South, its religious traditions, its social traditions are very... at heart, kind of medieval in a way, and really don't have anything to do with a social welfare state. And the normal people, keeping them ignorant and kind of primitive politically, is really part of what the South has always been about, as far as I can see.
Well, the federal government, of course.
And there's a kind of hypocrisy, and that's why I wanted to show that piece there, because I see more and more of that hypocrisy, and I think we saw some of it in that film. You know, that the Civil War wasn't about slavery, because some of the generals, like Lee and Stonewall Jackson, really weren't in favor of slavery. So what was the war about? Obviously, it wasn't about slavery. I think that is...
I'm very maudlin hypocrisy, too. May I just say something?
Sure.
In Lincoln's inaugural address, he pointed out that both sides in the war read the same Bible and prayed to the same God, and many of them prayed that war wouldn't come, and yet war did come. In the situation we have now with a gathering Armageddon in the Middle East, we see that all three sides pray to fundamentally the same God, and that the whole monotheistic project descends from this Abraham fellow, father of both Arabs and Jews. And
You can blame him.
And I'm praying that it could be avoided. I can only think that prophecy exists to tell us the things to avoid rather than to predetermine our future. Why else? I mean, presuming for a moment that the prophets and revelation are divinely inspired, why would God even make these pronouncements if it weren't for us to avoid being so stupid?
Well, you know,
there is no God. There is no Allah. And that's all I got to say about it. I don't believe it. I just
don't think
there is. I think God and spirituality is within the individual themselves.
You're a pantheist.
Can we avoid the is and the isn't?
Oh, well, we were working on that. I just heard about it tonight.
But, well, I think that all that praying by the general...
it's a racket.
It's a racket. It shows you that when people pray and they're really holy and they look up to the stars, you know, and then they make their political speech about how you need to...
Endorphins go through their head like cocaine.
You need to hang all of
the...
They
do. When people think of supernatural things, they have...
Union soldiers.
I'm feeling it right now.
I'm feeling it.
Okay. Hang on here, guys. I just think that, first of all, it's possibly true that at least most of these folks, the Southern generals, just like the Islamic fundamentalists now, really do believe this, and that's more scary. But the idea of states' rights, for instance, is something that's been used as the real reason for the Civil War. And of course, slavery was justified under states' rights, and that's why they like states' rights. And they also felt they had the right to secede, and the federal government of the United States had no right to tell them they couldn't, and of course they proceeded to beat their butts, and they still are resenting that 140 years later.
I don't blame them for resenting it.
Yeah. Well, maybe not, but they asked for it. They attacked Fort Sumter. And here's the thing, too. If a state, for instance, wanted to make a law that any white redneck over 21 years old could be lynched by the state government, I don't think those white rednecks would like that so well. I might be looking to the federal government for redress of grievances. The problem is, of course, that what the southern states were doing, of course, was mistreating black African-American slaves. If the white folks in the South had been the victims of any other group and been mistreated that way, and the federal government came to their aid, I somehow don't think they would... I think the federal government was, you know, it's the old saying, whose ox is being gored, of course.
When Stonewall Jackson or Jefferson Davis looks to the sky and prays, you know, and then looks to his people and says, you got to go to war, you got to, you know, protect states' rights against the Yankees, what he's not saying is protect our medieval feudal civil order, you know, where we have the poor whites and we've got the slaves and we've got this pyramidal structure of society. It's the same. I'm trying to draw a parallel to Bush and Bush's father and many Southern Republicans these days, like the old Dixiecrats, you know, before them, say, you know, protect our segregationist, you know, order. Because it's right and it's moral, and we've got to protect our womanhood.
That's a scam. It's the racial thing. I think there.
In the meantime, he's ripping
to the
them both off
through,
economically.
I think that people are not as racial as you think. I think maybe they are somewhere in the South. But I remember the mid '80s when it seemed like everybody was sort of getting along, and Michael Jackson was moon dancing. Maybe I was a little naive at the time, but it did not seem. Not the people that I knew and the people around me, that there was such a big segregation thing.
Well, wait a minute.
And it really didn't start until...
in the North.
It kicked in again when Rodney King got the shit beat out of him for being on PCP by the LAPD.
Could I redress that, though? Stop and think about welfare reform. Almost every white person, even poor people, even unemployed white people, think of welfare reform as a good thing. Why? Because it punishes welfare recipients. The perception probably being, at least subconsciously, that most people on welfare are black. That is not the case.
There are more
white people on welfare. But the perception is that, we got to put these lazy blacks to work. Let's get rid of welfare. And what white people don't realize that are saying that is, as they're finding out with all these layoffs now, they are someday going to be in a situation where they will need a safety net and won't be there.
Well, you know, now Clinton's, they didn't say, let's get these lazy welfare
But that's
welfare
the subconscious.
People. They said, let's enable these people.
Well, that's BS.
Let's get them in the group. But was
that's
it? There was a
language.
Lot of things. If you wanted to stay on welfare, you needed to go to classes where you could get trained for things.
Oh, sure,
What's wrong with trying to empower people a little bit?
That's not empowering them.
My turn. I agree with Mark that... these Christian fundamentalists were attempting to preserve a feudal order, but you'd have to admit that Osama bin Laden is attempting to preserve a feudal order in which women are basically enslaved. Sure. And here we have the mirror images.
Lower classes.
The mirror images of the people who think they're going to rule, rid the world of evil and can't see it in the mirror.
You can send people's jobs to Mexico, in the South, in the North, throughout the country, especially if you're talking about God and the Bible and family values all along. They just, somehow they don't connect the two. Okay, we're going to go to our next roll-in, which is roll-in three. But when we come back, we're also going to have a telephone call-in segment, which we're going to continue throughout the rest of the show. So call in. I know that
some
of you agree with us. Plenty of you disagree with us.
We're
open for your questions, your comments. Yes, 459-4881. Next roll-in. Okay.
I was finished. This is a company in the state of Florida hired to remove the names of people who committed serious crimes from the voter list. I've obtained a document from inside this outfit. It's marked confidential and trade secret. It says that the company was paid millions of dollars to make telephone calls to verify that they actually got the right names, but they didn't. There's nothing in the state of Florida files that says that they actually made these telephone calls. So the question remains, why did the Republican leaders of this state pay millions for a list that stopped thousands of innocent Democrats from voting? The first list from DBT included 8,000 names from Texas supplied by George Bush's state officials. They said they were all felons, serious criminals barred from voting. As it turns out, almost none were. Local officials raised a ruckus, and DBT issued a new list naming 58,000 felons. But the one county which went through the whole expensive process of checking the new list name by name found it was still 95% wrong.
They were going to verify.
Reverend Willie Whiting was one of those removed from the voter rolls after DBT wrongly labeled him a serious criminal.
I've never spent a night in jail. Never have.
Were you ever busted?
No, I had a speeding ticket probably 25, 30 years ago, I guess. Somewhere like that, but that's about it. I'm not.
You think you should be allowed to vote if you had a speeding ticket?
Absolutely. Okay.
The Florida legislature likes to see young prisoners paraded in front of the Capitol in old cavalry uniforms.
Me and Superman had a fight.
Me and Superman had a fight.
I hit him in the head with some kryptonite.
And more often than not in America, the prisoner's color is black. Because of the way DBT generated the list, every genuine black felon in the United States could knock out every black voter in Florida with the same surname and similar date of birth. And that's why the NAACP is suing Florida for violating voters' civil rights.
Governor Bush, Secretary of State Catherine Harris, Clay Roberts is the head of the Florida Department of Elections, all knew or should have known in advance that certain election policies and practices would disproportionately impact low-income areas and in particular black citizens and other minority citizens, and that this would disproportionately impact Democratic voters based on historical voting trends.
Thank you, Florida!
Altogether, it looks like this cost the Democrats about 22,000 votes in Florida, which George Bush won by only 537 votes. The U.S. Civil Rights Commission is also on the trail. They called in Bush, Harris, and Roberts. Bush did not convince his critics.
Resign already. You screwed up this state. You hope to steal this ballot.
I love you, man.
Commissioner Edley and his colleagues will be in Miami tomorrow to hear from voters who are wrongly disqualified.
If you're going to do it, by all means, as a matter of due process, as a matter of fairness, it's got to be done with excruciating care. It's a democracy. The vote counts. There's a lot of public concern that the contractor who was selected to do this is a firm that seems to have ties to the Republican Party.
And they will be putting our evidence to database technologies. Their vice president, James Lee, told Newsnight that manual verification by telephone calls does not mean ringing people up to check they've got the right person. So,
Were they paid $4 million to produce a list which they knew would name thousands of innocent black people? In fact, DBT told Newsnight that Clayton Roberts and the state of Florida wanted there to be more names than were actually verified as being a convicted felon. So, did they use their powers to prevent the count of 20,000 additional votes for the Democrats?
Welcome back to Oh Second You See. That was off the internet a couple years ago, January 2001. That was about more than 20,000 votes that were removed from the Democratic voting rolls in Florida by machinations of Catherine Harris and other people, apparently the president's brother, Jeb Bush, even the president in Texas, this DBT thing, Database Technologies, a private firm hired to
paid $3 million
to clean out from the voting rolls felons. But they did it in such a loose way that they knew that they would also get 20 or 30,000 legitimate votes because many black people have similar sounding names and similar birth dates. Of course, it was obviously a fraud. It was an entire ripoff. It's a crime.
It's a crime.
And you haven't heard very much about it except...
Like treason now, or something almost, really, isn't
well, yeah,
it? It's like treason,
yeah,
man.
It's treason.
Well, they kill those people, right? Treason's penalized by death?
Only in time of war.
Well, I mean, I'm talking about the law.
It's got to be a fair trial first.
Okay, well, let's just say that it seems very criminal, doesn't it, to, especially when Catherine Harris says that George Bush Jr. won the election in Florida by 536 votes. Well, right there they were talking about 27,000 votes. Which were obviously there are many other schemes that
I mentioned before that they did that poll pushing thing where they said in the same areas they sent out flyers that said don't forget to vote November 5th for the president. Well, it was November 4th, which is the first lie. But be sure you pay your taxes, your any outstanding tickets, and especially any warrants. You know, these were spread all through the lower. Incoming communities and to scare people off.
Well, I saw that particular DBT thing from the BBC is really significant for this show because you're talking about black voters who happen to be Democrats, and there you see that the ends justify the means, and as long as the president, and his family can talk about God a lot, everyone knows that they're holier than. Then the Yankees and the Democrats, even though, of course, that's where they come from.
Right? Yes, that's another interesting thing, too, is that both Bushes are from New England states, and yet somehow the... well, what's really interesting is in 1992, when Bush Sr. lost to Clinton, his most the most pro-Bush state was Mississippi. So you got these poor whites down there in Mississippi voting for this East Coast Yankee at the same time. Clinton swept all New England states at that time in 92, which is where both Bushes are from. So those folks up there in New England know what the Bushes are all
they
about.
Well, all the Bushes go to Yale, but the Bush family...
is from Houston.
They're from Connecticut, but Bush Sr., this Bush Daddy president, he moved the family in the 50s to Houston, and that's where George Jr.
Because of the oil.
Hatched, yeah. Oil patch.
May I say something?
Yes, absolutely.
We see that the Republicans in Florida were afraid of democracy and so had to make sure that it didn't happen in 2000. And now we see that the final justification for Iraq was to liberate it. And the Iraqis say, all right, let's have our election. And now he's going, well, wait a minute on this democracy thing. Let's not get out of hand here. He's reminding me of our first president.
It's a Southern tradition to be afraid of democracy. That was the reason that they seceded, because they couldn't stand to be a part of the national decision would be.
And in all fairness, the founding fathers were a little afraid of direct democracy because the Supreme Court was and still is lifetime appointment. The Senate, up until about the 19 teens, those U.S. senators were not elected.
Didn't have a six-year term.
They were appointed by state legislatures. The president, as we see, is not directly elected. The only a federal institution that they trusted people to vote for directly was the United States House of Representatives. So when people say, if you have a problem with the Electoral College, take it up with the Founding Fathers. Well, I would if any of them were still alive, but, you know, they're not around to complain to.
This is a live call-in show. You're welcome to call in with your questions, your comments. We know that a lot of you out there disagree with us. We know that there's more than a few of you that also agree with what we're saying, and we welcome your calls, your comments.
I wonder how many Jeffersons, Jacksons, and Washingtons were cut off of those
roles. Well, that's how
roles
it works. Exactly. If you were a Jefferson, if you were a Washington,
phony felons.
If you were a Jones, if you were a Smith, and especially if you were a black one,
well,
and a Democrat.
How would they know, though?
Well, apparently, when you lose 27,000 voters and almost all of them are black, somehow they knew this.
I wonder how they would know that.
Well, the Bush administration from Texas gave the names of a bunch of likely people to this corporation.
DBT.
And they just took it over to Florida and said, well, if these names are in Texas, then there might be felons in Florida,
well,
too. So it was a very inside job.
Well, they would have had to know
if you had actually watched the clip.
They would have had to know which counties you were talking about, because you could certainly know the demographics of a given county.
They did it at a statewide level. They did it out of the state
county
office.
County by county.
Statewide.
There were other ways.
Like they're doing it in Texas right now.
Redistricting.
They're redistricting. They call it
gerrymandering.
I love the word.
Yeah, and we talked about it.
Yeah, we talked about it last week. It's just ridiculous. Yeah. Hey, I've got a question. Okay. You know, we have no call-ins right now. If there's anybody out there who is black, gay, or a woman, is a Republican...
Well,
I would like to hear from you, and I really want to know why.
EB, we'll take your call. Your question, your comment. EB, go ahead.
I didn't hear what you said.
Say it again, Dennis.
We're taking your call. Can we hear you?
No, but you want to know what you said there before.
Your statement.
Yeah. He said that anyone who is a woman or a black and a Republican, too, is... What did you say, Dennis?
I said I would like to hear from anybody who is gay, black, or a woman who thinks that they're a Republican, and I would like to know why.
Oh, I'm not.
And she called him before that.
Quiet.
I'm not a Republican.
Do you have a question or comment other than that, then?
I have a question.
Yes. Sure.
You might have discussed this before, but I didn't see the first part of your program. Why is it taking so long to sort out the injustice about voting in Florida in the last election? We keep talking about it, and nothing's happened.
Because the governor of Florida is Bush's brother, and he's in power, and he certainly doesn't want any of this coming out. The report that we just showed on here came from the BBC. It was never aired on any major media in the United States, as far as I could tell.
And it was the worst of it.
We got it from a streaming video off the internet.
Do you have an answer to that question?
Well, I agree with Steve. I mean, as long as Jeb Bush is the governor of Florida, you're not going to see any...
Catherine Harris. Carl Rove babysat her that entire time he was down there, making sure that she said the right things and the right people talked to her.
Did he put her makeup on her?
He probably wiped her ass. That's what he babysat her. You asked. He was right there with her the whole time.
Let's keep it a little...
And Carl Rove... Someday everybody should know who he is.
We don't want Michael Powell coming down on us.
I don't think I said anything wrong.
Oh. Is Evie still there?
Yes, I am. I just wondered, is it ever going to be resolved? Because I'm a white Democrat, and this has bothered me since the last election.
Well, I'm a white Democrat, too, and I'm still angry.
It still pisses me off.
We're all angry about that.
I don't know if I'm more angry at the Bushes or I am at Gore for just backing off.
Well, he fought it for 5 weeks.
I'm angry about Bush saying that it's God's will and that God picked him when obviously it was a fraud from the
beginning.
Supreme
Court picked him.
Yeah, okay. We'll just have to wait and see.
Thanks for your call, Evie. We'll say goodbye to you now. We'll get ready for our next roll-in which is from the movie The Skulls that was a 2000 movie. But I would say about Evie's call that my answer would be that because the Supreme Court itself ultimately ended all of the questions about all of this, that the only way that we're ever going to get an answer to all of that is simply by voting someone else into office other than George Bush the second.
Even if it's an honest Republican. That would be an improvement.
Well, yeah, well, go find an honest
a Republican.
Republican.
No,
honest
name,
Republic.
A Republican not named
an
Bush.
Honest
hopefully.
Republican will not
I'm
win
for Vern
the
Ehlers.
Nomination.
How about Vern Ehlers?
Vern Ehlers, he's an honest Republican.
I like Vern.
Okay.
He's not particularly courageous, but he's honest.
Not particularly courageous, but I think he's honest. He's
ready for the rolling four there?
Yeah.
Okay, anytime. We'll run this a little bit shorter. I'll tell you when to cut it off.
Here we go, McNamara.
Guess this one didn't make it through the reborn part.
You better check his breathing.
I don't know. Maybe he didn't react too well to the drugs.
Wow!
Hey, Caleb.
Where can I get some more of that shit?
Get up and shut up, Mandrake.
I'm sorry, Mr. Monk.
Congratulations, Skulls.
On your rebirth. A skull above any other. Say it.
A skull above any other.
Louder.
A skull above any other.
No outsider shall ever know the work of the order or the composition of its membership.
Before you can enter our world and begin your year, our council has a small task for you to complete. You might call it a test.
The university's secret society has been playing a little game for over 200 years. Mascots. We steal theirs, they try and steal ours. We have one left for...
Well, that's from The Skulls, 2000. Neil H. Moritz was the producer. Rob Cohen was the director, and it was Universal Studios. And the reason I show that, and I'm going to show a little bit more of it in another minute, is that you've got this group of people who go to Yale. It's not a fraternity, it's a senior society, and many presidents have come out of this group. And in fact, we have a Democratic frontrunner who's from out of the Skull and Bone Society right now.
Kerry!
Yes, Jim.
John Kerry.
And of course, the President of the United States, George Bush, was known in that senior society as Temporary. That was his name in the group, was Temporary. And he was a Skull. And, okay, can we show this other thing? And this will make more sense to the overall show. We'll just go to the next little chunk of The Skulls. Universal Studios, yes, okay. Anytime. Let's go.
I wonder if the cast is correct.
Okay, this is cool because there's this...
expecting us.
Kent Hodgins.
Over here, please.
John Packard. Jonathan Edward Payne. Over here.
You, Dalton Balderson. Over here, please.
Lawrence Torn. Here.
Caleb Andrake. Over here, please. Lucas McNamara. This way, please.
I'm Judge Lytton Mandrake, and on behalf of the council, welcome. In any fellowship, you need someone you can trust. Someone to be there, always and for anything. A soulmate. Well, my soulmate is Senator Ames Leverett, class of 72.
Gentlemen, you've been arranged in pairs, soulmates. Each soulmate was chosen to complement the other and to accept responsibility for the other.
Mr. Wheeler, Mr. Pitcairn.
Thank you.
Open them. Our membership, like life, has its pleasures, its hardships, and sometimes its pain. But unlike life, the connection between you is eternal. Let this seal the bond between you. Be silent as you endure. Well done. Gentlemen, put on your watches. With the council as your witnesses, you have now become soulmates.
And now, gentlemen, the rules.
We live by the rules, we die by the rules.
Read your rule book. There's a rule for every possible situation. Guard the key to our entry and your rule book as you would guard your own lives. Most important, remember, our rules supersede those of the outside world. A skull above any other.
A skull above any other.
Well done, gentlemen. Congratulations. As chairman of the Order of Skulls and on behalf of the council and the 322 alumni throughout the world, gentlemen, you are welcome. Welcome home. Proudest day of my life, Caleb.
Thanks, Dad. I want to make you proud.
There's 12 in an order line. The pink one.
No, the white one.
The white one.
Well, you saw another little chunk of The Skulls, which was about the Skull and Bone Society, quite apparently. And in there are a couple important things to look at. A skull above any other, and we're not answerable to normal laws, etc. And one thing that you really can see in there that's pretty well documented from some of the few things that are known about the Skull and Bone Society at Yale is that, well, they only, according to this book by Chris Milligan, they only accept the people from generally the pure Anglo-Saxon bloodlines of old New England, wealth, and there's a lot of secrecy involved, and the idea is that you scratch my back, I scratch your back. We're the superior folk of the land. We're the master race, and they're into master race kind of old German 19th century
old
philosophy. Old school, yeah. And part of that philosophy part of that is the idea that war is the is the organizing principle of society. That as long as you have war, the threat of war, the enemy on the outside, then the ruling class can rule.
The fear that breeds
people,
ignorance.
The people who need to rule can rule by the principle of war. If you don't have an enemy, you need to create an enemy.
Yes.
And war allows the superior people to rise to positions of leadership. So it is known that the vault, the main ceremonial room of the Skull and Bone Society, does have the war carved into the wall in giant letters. That is known. So pretty scary. And if you think about war being something that the Skull and Bone Society worships as something that causes a leader to arise and gives character to the man and gives an organizing principle to society, then George Bush Jr. makes a lot of sense, that he's finally come into his own. And comments we're going to go through.
War. It's here on page 12 of The Nation, December 22nd, 2003.
American Apocalypse article.
American Apocalypse. War itself, an absolute. It's violence, unpredictable, and always containing apocalyptic possibilities. Always there for the religious dogma to take whatever angle they need to take with it.
In these circumstances, I think that George Bush himself, George Bush Jr., has a candidacy potential for being Antichrist himself from these perspectives.
Go ahead. No, he's not that intelligent, but he was selected by the Supreme Court, and ultimately, since he comes out of Skull and Bones, I think he was selected by the God of this world, otherwise known as the Prince of Darkness.
Okay, Steve?
I'd like to take the caller. We've only got one minute left.
Okay. Go ahead.
Jasmine, you went to see Michael Moore last week, right?
Yeah.
How'd you like it?
I think he was pretty cool.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Are you reading his book now?
Yep.
What are you getting out of it?
I don't know.
You don't know yet?
Nope.
Well, I'm glad you're starting.
How old are you, Jasmine?
Yeah.
How old are you?
How old are you?
12?
I'm 10.
10. Well, it's good to have somebody at such
Who are you voting for, or who are you supporting in the upcoming Democratic caucuses on Saturday?
Dean.
Dean?
Yeah.
Huh. I'm for Kucinich. How about you guys?
I like Clark.
I'm for Clark.
I like Edwards, too.
Edwards is a...
I like Kucinich, but...
I'd like to see a Clark Edwards.
Everyone that I was in favor
that
of...
That would be fantastic.
Their candidacies have imploded, so I guess I'm for the lesser of the evil Skull and Bonesman.
The Crypt Keepers.
You're
going to
vote for Skull and Bonesman?
No, I won't. I mean, when the general election comes around, I will, but at this point, I guess I'll vote for Kucinich, yeah. Okay.
Thanks for calling, Jasmine.
Thank you for calling, Jasmine.
You're welcome. Goodbye.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye. You've been watching Oh Say Can You See. We're the CTV Society. We've been here for 8.5 years. And we'll be here every first, third, and fifth Wednesday of the month. You can pretty much count on it. We have reruns every Tuesday from 6 to 7 on this channel.
You want to watch the upcoming show?
And?
Oh, vote!
Hey, vote.
Yeah,
this.
The caucuses are this Saturday. You know what? You don't necessarily vote where you vote for the president. You got to find out where you got to vote. Isn't that a bunch of crap, too?
Double click.
There's no victory.
Double click the green.
Yeah, that's right. Vote Saturday.
Double click the green.
But we're not going to tell you where.
Yeah, if you double click that button, the light will stay on. Then.
That's technical difficulties, yeah.
Technical difficulties.
Thank you.